Coming up in Talk Jamaica today, Sunday, June 10, 2018, we begin with stories from the week that was. And the stories include Cuthbert Flynn debates abortion, tourism advisor racks up $9 million travel bill, and let the chips fall, says the PNP.
Good afternoon, listeners. My name is Ralston Chamberlain.
And my name is Sanjay Lewis, and this is Talk Jamaica, your cutting-edge commentary show, live on One Radio, and we're streaming live on oneradio.link, and also via our One Radio mobile app.
And as usual, we come to you live on Sundays from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. We welcome you to today's edition of the program.
Also in the program, our opinion feature In Perspective and Talk History.
We ask you, as usual, to share your thoughts on our feedback question. Today we ask, is it time for Jamaica to decriminalize abortion? Send your responses to the Talk Jamaica Facebook group page, or you can tweet us at Talk JA Radio. We invite you to stay with us as we share those thoughts throughout the show. And you can interact with us using those platforms as well.
We now take our first break, and up next is our opinion feature In Perspective. Please stay with us.
Say enough the practice, we eat parrot fish, cause of them clean the coral reef there. Jamaica little this, save the parrot fish, cause of them bring the sand from we beach them. Yeah. Oh, whether you are the buyer, seller or the fisherman, say you can help save our island. Do not bring no parrot fish, come a dry land. Fisherman, put away your hook on your nylon. Make with some dry erode the soil of save the parrot fish.
Brought to you by Sandals Resorts, the Jamaica Observer, and Rainforest Seafoods.
Calling all CSEC, CAPE, and tertiary students. There's an innovative research service here for you. It's all about Research Aid Plus, the Caribbean's first online platform that facilitates a wide gamut of research for SBAs, IAs, as well as university and college assignments. Research Aid Plus also serves companies and organizations. All our researchers are skilled in qualitative, quantitative, and mixed method research. We guarantee excellent results as one out of every two clients reuse or services. Expect results between 1 and 14 days. At Research A Plus, you have the teams, tools, and the technology to provide the insights to make your research resounding, profound, and effective. Register today at www.researchaid.plus and get a 50% discount coupon. Registration is free. Call Progress Initiative Management Limited, owners and operators of Research Aid Plus, via telephone or WhatsApp at 545-9745, or email us at management@researchaid.plus. Like us on Facebook at Initiate Progress, or Instagram, Initiate Progress. Follow us on Twitter at @ThinkProgress. Research Aid Plus. Think. Investigate. Empower.
Welcome back to Talk Jamaica here on One Radio, and of course we are streaming live on oneradio.link. We now present to you In Perspective.
It's now time for In Perspective.
Good afternoon again, listeners, and welcome to In Perspective. And as usual, we invite you to share with, to understand the opinion that we share in this segment of the show. Usually, as usual, listeners, I bring to you, I give you the information, and you can sift through, and you can discern, and you can draw your own conclusion based on the facts as I present them to you. And so this afternoon, I want to bring to your attention what has been in the public domain the issue of the hiring of advisors within the ministries and agencies of the government of Jamaica. And I want to zoom in particularly on one particular instance that has been making the rounds on our televisions, on radio this week. Now, listeners, let me make it clear from the outset that it is the prerogative of the government of the day to hire the advisors that they need, persons who will carry on and carry out the mandate and the policies of the government of the day. So it is within the right of the government to hire those who they believe will do that with the necessary competency and the skill sets that they might bring to the position. So you or I should not have an issue if the persons or person is higher within the guidelines that would be set out by the government and the relevant ministries. Now, the issue has come to our attention that one particular activist of the Jamaica Labour Party hired in the Ministry of Tourism, yes, has racked up as much as 9 million in travel expenses. Now, this is what we know. We are understanding that there, within a 2-year span, there has been a $9 million, 15 months, not necessarily 2 years, within 15 months, a $9 million travel bill. That we know, that is a fact. We are not yet fully aware of the breakdown. So that we need to get, and that so that we can fully understand and ask the necessary question as to, did we get value for money? So those are the questions that you and I need to keep in the forefront of our minds. Did we get value for money? How was this money spent, this $9 million? So we should not just look at it and say, oh, it's $9 million. We need to understand how it was spent, what was it for? Yes? But I, listeners, like the Gleaner editorial, have some question as to the roles and functions, the job description of the said gentleman. Now, I am not here to cast any judgment on Mr. Sievright's capability or his skill set. But having listened to the news, and having listened to one particular interview done by Mr. Sievright, according to him, his job is that of communication specialist within the Tourist Enhancement Fund. And so one of the questions I want to know is whether or not that job requires of him to do that number of travels, communication strategies. Yes? And according to Mr. Sievright, not my word, we have gotten value for money because in going abroad, then he is able to sell Jamaica tourism as a tourism spot. But then I ask the question, what about those offices that we have overseas? What are their functions? What are they doing? What is the tourist board? What is the role of the Jamaica Tourist Board in all of this if Mr. Sievright has to be the one going abroad to sell Jamaica? What of the Minister of Tourism, we might ask? So there are questions floating around in our mind because we want to know and we ought to know. Yes? And so those questions I put out there to you, listeners, and I'm sure you want to get answers to them. And we are not saying that Mr. Steve Wright has done anything untoward, but the taxpayers of this country must know, and we must demand to know how our money is being spent. Second to that, listeners, if we recall, Mr. Steve Wright, yes, was one of those persons in opposition when the government, this present administration, was in opposition. He was one of them who spoke about how taxpayers' money was being spent by advisors, a position he now holds. Let's talk about the hypocrisy of that. Yes? And I'm putting that to you so you can draw your own conclusion. And so, I think no other person than the Prime Minister, yes, must say to us what is happening here in terms of Mr. Steve Wright. And in addition to that, other advisors we're hearing about. One, I'm understanding, is employed as a full-time in one other government agency and then as an advisor in another government agency. And yet, listeners, let us look at how are we to understand, are we to draw the conclusion, and I leave that to you, are we to draw the conclusion that we can find all this money for advisors and yet still we ask that the beneficiaries of the PATH program are getting a meager, I understand the last time I checked in, as meager as I think when we checked it, it was about $10 or so per month are now being kicked off the program. We have questions, listeners, and the government of the day must give us some answers. And that, listeners, is In Perspective.
That was In Perspective.
Welcome back to Talk Jamaica here on One Radio. We are streaming live via oneradio.link and via the One Radio mobile app. My name is Ralston Chamberlain. My co-host this afternoon is Sanjay Lewis. And now, listeners, we present our review of some of the major stories from the week that was. Now, first story. Go ahead.
The first story, listeners, and I think I want to jump to the second story and make it the first story, considering that it is relevant to what is being discussed, and I hope my co-host will allow me. Tourism advisor racks up 9 million travel bill. And the story reads, listeners, the Public Accounts and Appropriations Committee descended into what I would call an abyss. And the report says a shouting match when the chairman revealed that the Delano Steve Wright, a senior strategist in the Ministry of Tourism, cost the country almost 9 million, and to be exact, 8.9 million in travel expenses. The shouting between members of the committee happened when the member of the governing Jamaica Labour Party accused the opposition of playing politics. It got to the point where the committee chair called for a recess. During the sitting, government members on the committee attempted to shut down the discussion on the travel bill. An opposition member, Fitz Jackson, said he would not be deterred. Now, listeners, I happened to watch the Public Administration and Accountability Committee, Public Accounts and Appropriations Committee, I should say, in full. And I watched the proceeding back and forth between the opposition members and the government members who sit on the committee. Now, for those who did not have the privilege to watch what happened, so the chairman, who happens to be a former minister of tourism, Wicker MacNeil, laid a piece of document on the table for the members. What was being discussed, listeners, it was the TEF and the road work that the TEF did over a period. The chairman decided, listeners, to introduce a foreign item, as the members called it, to the discussion, that of the travel bill of a member of the TEF, who happens to be a supporter of the JLP, Delano Sievright. The members of the JLP had an issue because their thing was that the chairman, utilizing his powers, wanted to introduce something that was not on the order paper to discuss. And it caused what we call, and what I call, the house, the committee to descend an abyss, because there was a shouting match from both sides, as the government said that that was not part of the things to be discussed, and the opposition said that they think it should have been discussed. Suffice to say, listeners, the information came to the public. And when we hear of travel bill and we hear of phone bill and the amount that is being spent, there's a big uproar without understanding and putting anything into context. The unfortunate thing about what was made public was that it was not placed in context. And as such, all we have heard is $9 million travel bill without any context being placed in the entire, in the broad scheme of what was discussed. However, listeners, now, if we should go by what is being said, 9 million, and I'm not going to, I don't have the facts and all the facts before me, so I'm not going to get all hysterical over $9 million and who spent what, because I don't have any proof as to the 9 million and whether it's justified or not. Yes, and we see a response from Mr. Sievright that was made public, and one of the things that Mr. Sievright have made very clear is the gains made by the tourism ministry, by the TEF, which would support the $9 million travel bill. If we're going to have a discussion, I think that we need to have a discussion to match what is being done by the good gentleman, and by extension the TEF, and compare if what is being spent, if we're getting value for money. And that is where we should take the discussion, and not about $9 million out of context, not putting it into context with what we get as value for money. So all I have to say on this matter is, if we're going to have a discussion about monies and monies being spent, let us put it into context. Let us look on what is being spent, and let us look on what is gained. Are we getting value for money? And if we're getting value for money, then I am satisfied with the amount that is being spent.
So I have a few questions for you. I have a few questions. And I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of the listeners who might have some kind of doubt in their mind. So let me ask. Question number one. Are you here to defend the $9 million that was spent? That's my first question.
And I said before,
I'm answering them. I'm going to ask them one by one.
And let me respond right as you ask. I am not here to defend the $9 million, and I'm not here, and I'm not here either to say that it is too little or too much, because we have to put it into context, which is where we need to take the discussion. Which
what's
is where
your
I'm not
understanding
hearing
of
the discussion.
Hold on, just a moment. What's your understanding of Mr. Sievright's position, job? What's his job?
My understanding of his job is that he is a communication strategist in the TEF. That's my understanding
the
of it.
TEF, the tourism, he's a communication strategist.
Yes.
And would you say, based on your limited understanding of the position beyond I, would this position require him to do that extensive amount of travel?
It quite possibly could.
So would you agree with me that there has to be some conflict? Because if we go back and look at what the tourism enhanced, but so if we understand Mr. Sievright correctly, his role was to go abroad and sell Jamaica. Is that what you understand it to be? As a tourist destination, is that your understanding?
That is not my understanding.
What is your understanding?
No, based on what he has said in several interviews.
Because my understanding in the interview was that he was going abroad to sell Jamaica as a tourism destination. Did you get that?
But even so.
Isn't that a form of tourism enhancement? No, that was not the reason why the tourism enhancement fund was
set up. I'm asking you. Isn't that a form of tourism enhancement?
What was the reason for the tourism enhancement fund?
Tell us.
Why was it set up?
Tell us.
According to the TEF, the Tourism Enhancement Fund Act of 2004, mm-hmm. yes, and then was subsequently amended in 2011, provided a legal basis for the establishment of a mechanism for the collection of small fees from incoming airline and cruise passengers. I don't know where in that there is any... where it says that...
The Tourism Enhancement Fund... was established on May 1st, 2005 for the sole purpose of implementing the recommendations emanated from the so we're reading from the same document.
Development within the country.
It says nothing about within. It says, what we're reading, I gather you're reading from the Ministry of Tourism website, correct?
Let us read
the thing in its entirety. And I'm reading from the Ministry of Tourism website, right, which speaks specifically to the Tourism Enhancement Fund. And it says, the Tourism Enhancement Fund, the TEF, was established on May 1st, 2005, for the sole purpose of implementing the recommendations emanating from the Master Plan for Sustainable Tourism Development in 2002. The Tourism Master Plan provides the framework in which the TEF will fulfill its mandate of promoting growth and development in the tourism sector. What do you understand from promoting growth and development in the tourism sector?
So you are, by virtue of that, you're saying that requires Mr. Sievright to go abroad and
why not? If you are promoting growth and development in the tourism sector, is it that you're
going abroad and selling Jamaica?
Does it not require you to go abroad?
Is that what you don't know?
Does it not require you to go abroad?
That's what you're saying.
But does it not require you to go abroad?
Is that your interpretation of the act?
Again, I'm asking you.
Is that your interpretation?
If it says to me...
You said sustainable development in the tourism sector.
Yes. So what is wrong if a part of it means that you're going abroad?
Development.
To promote growth.
So growth. By your understanding, you're saying that that's what the act was, that's what they had in mind.
It is to fulfill the Tourism Master Plan which provides the framework in which the TEF will fulfill its mandate. of promoting growth and development in the tourism sector.
Light of that, you are saying to me that requires Mr. Sievright, a communication specialist.
Yeah, because he's promoting growth and development.
Communication specialist, strategist, rather, to make all those trips abroad. So what he said to us that he was acting on behalf of the Ministry of Tourism in going abroad, yes, to sell Jamaica, could be something different from what the TEF was set up for. So we need to ask then, what then is the rationale for the Jamaica Tourist Board? What then is the reason for having a finance minister, a minister of tourism? Is it that both of them had gone to the same places? And did he go alone? Did anybody from the JTB go with him? So we need, there has to be, and you must understand, and you must admit that there is a conflict in the information, that is coming to us, the public, from this administration, particularly in regards to this gentleman, And I am in no way saying or trying to say that anything untoward is taking place. But we must look at the information that we are getting, and there are questions. Because first of all, his name did not show up on the list of advisors that were presented to the administration. Yet still, the travel bill came back showing him as an advisor to the minister.
No. Not correct.
That is not correct.
It came up as as a member of the TEF. He did not come up as an advisor to the minister. So that's not correct. That is not correct.
Listeners, I'll check that back and I'll get back to you on that, because my understanding why the matter was so contentious was the fact that in another place, we were told that he is an advisor to the minister. Yes?
No.
In another place,
it was understood by the chairman of the TEF.
In another place, we were told that he is an advisor to the minister, yet his name did not show up on the list of advisors presented. Yes?
And because he was not employed to the Ministry of Tourism.
If you go back, listeners, to the discussion in the Senate, where the Minister of Information was at pains to explain what was happening with these advisors, then you can understand that something is actually missing. There are some missing pieces, and we need to get the answers.
I want to read for your listeners, you see, because as a member, Google is my friend. Remember that I mentioned earlier that the TEF is there to support the Tourism Master Plan. And I have before me, listeners, the Tourism Master Plan, which happens to have been created when one Portia Simpson Miller was Minister of Tourism and Sports. And the plan reads that the purpose of this master plan, the aim of the master plan, is actually threefold. To provide a comprehensive planning framework for the development of one of Jamaica's leading industries, which would be tourism. To elaborate a vision of future direction, shape, and composition of the industry that can serve to guide the actions of the huge number of stakeholders in the industry to the common goal and purpose. And three, to detail the timing sequence of the major programs, roles, and responsibilities of key players, institutional arrangement, and resource requirements for bringing the vision, listeners, of tourism to fruition. Now, the TEF is lending support to this master plan of enhancing tourism and the vision on where we want to take tourism. Now, if that is not an understanding of somebody needing to travel to push this master plan,
no, we're not talking
then I don't
about,
know what it is.
No, no. We are not talking about somebody needing to travel. We're talking about someone who is said to be an advisor to the minister, who now has said he's a communications strategist with the TEF, doing all those traveling. And the question comes back to, what about the people from the tourist board? What are their functions? Were they a part of this traveling? My understanding is that the tourist board was in the business of promoting, doing the very things that Mr. Sievright said he is hired to do.
Then maybe we need to look back on the different facets of government, and if we're overlapping, and then we need to probably merge some of the different agencies that we have in government.
No,
so that's
what
a
we
separate
need
discussion
answers.
That we need to have.
What we need is answers as to why, if there is an overlap, why? And whether or not, and as I said at the beginning of this program, whether or not there was an overlap in who was going and why were they going. That needs to be
You know, listeners, for me, as I said, we have to look at it in context. So I'm not saying that the 9 million is too much or too little. But we have to look at it in context as to what is it that the value that we're getting. The other thing too is I find it hypocritical that now this hysteria on this consultant, because this vex issue of consultants is not anything new.
No, no, no.
Yes?
You're not going to go there.
No. Let me make the point.
If you're going to go there and talk about the PMP being hypocritical, then you must admit that Mr. Sievright, who was one of the main opposers of this advisor issue, is one of the biggest hypocrites we have.
I don't know.
So don't go down that road.
No, but
go down that road of talking about the hypocrisy of advisors, because you, sir, on this program many a times have pointed out, oh, it was done under the previous administration. So don't come here to talk about the hypocrisy of it, because Mr. Sievright, yes, who is now an advisor, was strongly against advisors when they were in opposition.
Would you mind providing me with the facts to show that he was strongly opposed to it?
Or read the Gleaner's editorial. Read the Gleaner's editorial.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Go read the Gleaner's editorial. And if you were following Mr. Sievright, who is as tribalist as anyone can get, yes, he is as tribalist as anyone can get, then you would have understood and you would have known that what I have said to you is indeed fact.
So let me ask you this question. Do you
and
have
I'm
a problem?
Saying,
no, let me
I
ask you this
not
question.
Saying that Mr. Sievright ought not to get, and as I said from the outset, the government is...
So you don't have a problem with advisors?
The government is within...
So you don't have a problem with government advisors?
What I have an issue with, and I said from the outset...
So you have an issue with the hypocrisy?
I have an issue with whether or not we are getting value for our money.
So we're on the same page then.
Hold on.
We're on the same page then.
Or not, Mr. Sievright's position as a communication strategist within TEF is conflicting with the many positions of the Jamaica Tourist Board. Yes? And that requires answers. We also need to understand what this 9 million was spent for. Yes? And how was it spent? Simple questions that any taxpayer of this country want to know.
So let me understand you.
Within their right, the government is within their right to appoint advisors to whatever ministry they want to appoint them. Yes, but we must ensure that when we talk about the issue of being fiscally prudent, and when we are asking others to hold strain, the government must lead. The government must lead by example, and we cannot come here and say, they quarrel with one side, and you often talk about the new paradigm in governance, and we cannot be looking back all the time to say they did it, so it's okay. If we do it now, it cannot be okay.
This is my final comment on the matter before we move on. My final comment, as I've said, is, look, we have to put it into context, and the question where the debate should be is, are we getting value for money? And that is where we should take the discussion, not about who is government consultant or not. Yes, because if we're going to look from that angle, then we need to look, do we need to revise? How is it that government consultants are selected? Or if we should scrap this whole idea of government consultants, if we're going to look at it from the angle that we're now taking it. If we're not going to look at it from that angle, then what we need to do then is look at, are we getting value for money? And if we're getting value for money, then it's a much ado about nothing. If we're not getting value for money, that is where we need to call whether the gentleman should resign, because we are not getting value for money.
I am not calling for Mr.
No. I'm saying if we're where we should take the discussion. So it's not about... So for me... I don't know if we're getting value for money, because we need to match it to see, and maybe we need to have the Auditor General go into the TEF to see what is it that is being delivered if we're getting value for money. If we're getting value for money, then it's a non-issue.
All right, listeners, let me move to the next story. Cuthbert Flynn debates abortion. So on Tuesday, first term Member of Parliament Juliet Cuthbert Flynn reignited the debate on abortion when she called for it to be decriminalized, thus ensuring that women have access to safe means of abortion. Her call comes after those of MPs Dr. Dayton Campbell and Lisa Hanna in 2014 and 15. All three MPs in their calls were asking for what is still considered a taboo in mainstream Jamaica. In her presentation, Cuthbert Flynn pointed out discrepancies in the law as it stands, which makes it a criminal offense to do or cause an abortion, except in the case of medical emergency. To support this, she went on to say that medical facilities like the Victoria Jubilee are well equipped to facilitate these women who develop complications after doing the unsafe abortion, hence making them an accessory to a crime after the fact. To this end, she asked that the issue of abortion be dealt with under civil law, not criminal law. Her resolution asked for the repeal of Section 72 and 73 of the Offences Against Persons Act, replacing it with a subtitle under civil law titled the Termination of Pregnancy Act. I am absolutely in agreement with MP Cuthbert Flynn. I think it is time that we move towards that and not just be lip service. And let me hope that she be very strident in pushing this, and that the government, along with the opposition, work in ensuring that we have this change in the law, in the act, and that they have as much consultation as possible, because I'm sure there are going to be those who are going to push back against this. But I believe, and I strongly believe, and I've always said this, that we should not be criminalizing a person's body. Women should have control over what they do with their bodies. And I recall, Sanjay, listeners, that we had a discussion on this program with the National Family Planning Agency, who had advised us that there would be a greater good in having a facility where, equipped, properly facility, where women can feel like if they want to have an abortion, they can go ahead and do that. Because in doing that, then you might very well catch some of them at that point in time And through the necessary conversation, through the necessary consultation, they might very well decide that, oh, you know what, I am not going to bother with this abortion. But we have this criminalized abortion on our books, and we have our women still going to these doctors who do this, these botched up abortion, and they end up in a more serious and a more precarious position than they were in before. So I absolutely agree with MP Cuthbert Finn. I absolutely support her, and I hope that this debate is moved forward as expeditiously as possible.
I agree with you, Ralston. What is happening is, listeners, as some of you may be aware, abortion is happening in Jamaica. Yes? And what you have happening is you have a lot of undercover, underground persons who are conducting these abortions that can probably ultimately cost the life of the individual, of the mother. So it is time that you get rid of this archaic law. And we should, within context, look at how we decriminalize the whole thing of abortion. Because, and I know the church and the morality issue is going to come into play, and we have already heard the discussion happening. But it is something that should be done, and I think that it is well past the time that we remove this law from our books.
Indeed.
All right. We move to the next story. The story, "Let the Chips Fall," says the PNP. The PNP has urged the Manchester Municipal Corporation to cooperate with the police in their probe. The Deputy Mayor of Mandeville, the PNP Councillor Irvin Facey of the Spurtree Division, stepped down amidst a fraud probe by the police. In a release from the leader of the People's National Party, Dr. Peter Phillips, it mentioned that the party acknowledged allegations that were made against Stone of its councillor in the municipal council and other staff members, and urged its members to fully support the investigators. It is alleged that at the heart of the developing scandal at the municipal corporation are questions about the disbursement and encashment of unauthorized checks, and whether the proceeds from these checks were used in a recent local PNP regional activity. Deputy Mayor Facey was said to have been a signatory to the checks, which amount to more than $1 million. The scandal of the Manchester Municipal Corporation has also ignited an internal feud among some PNP supporters in and outside of Manchester, including the neighboring parish of St. Elizabeth. And some comrades are alleging that the proceeds of the checks in question were used to channel funds to a local PNP activity in the party's Region 5 organization. Now, listeners, I'm not going to point fingers at any political party or the PNP or whatever. I believe that the local authority, just generally, we have had this discussion about reforming of local government, and it's something, Ralston, that we have spoken about on this very show. I remember when the local government minister Desmond Mackenzie, he took office, there was an order for an audit of the local authorities across Jamaica, and I think that is well overdue that we not only look on the Manchester Parish Council, but we look at all the parish councils that we have in Jamaica to see what exactly is happening. Because I'm sure that if we should do an audit of some of the other parish councils, whether it is a GLP-run or a PNP-run parish council, we will see very much of the same things happening, where funds are being channeled for illicit means. So I think that is something that is much bigger than the Manchester Parish Council. And the question is, whatever happened with that matter in the, was it the Hanover Parish Council? Whatever happened with that one? Don't hear anything more from it. Remember with the mayor at the time, and the mayor had to resign, and the mayor had said that if she should call names, many other persons would be implicated. Whatever happened with that story? And I gather also, listeners, that there is something brewing in another parish council that if that one should come out, it's more than a million based on my sources, but we're looking at upwards of 30 million in that of the parish council. I won't call the name of the parish council because it's all I'm hearing is from a source. I don't have the facts to substantiate it, but all I will say is that we need a proper audit of all the parish councils that we have here in Jamaica.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And you know, you and I's position in regards to parish councils and councillors. And I absolutely agree with you that there has to be some serious auditing of how these councils operate. I think the issue of that councillor of which you speak, I'm trying to remember her name. What had happened is that there was nothing criminal.
Oh yes. Yes. You're
that
correct.
That brought against
yes,
her.
Yes, I remember.
But there was that the DPP had ruled that there was nothing criminal, but what was done was absolutely unethical and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But beside that, I'm not going to, like you, say that we shouldn't speak about this issue in the Manchester municipality, because I think we must speak about it. Because if it is that persons within the municipality was using taxpayers' money, yes, and channeling to illicit means, then they must be called to books. They must go to jail. And I agree that the police must do the investigations, and those who are responsible must be held, they must be charged, and they must be brought before the courts, and the courts must do what is required. Because we cannot have it, Sanjay listeners, where these councillors, mayors believe, yes, and whether PNP or JLP believe that they can channel taxpayers' monies through some kind of loophole, that this money will end up, yes, in the pocket, in either their pocket or in the pockets of their friends, and then we do not get value for our money. And I think if the stories that we're hearing is true, then it's absolutely troubling. It's absolutely troubling. Yes, because I don't know if you were aware of the voice note that was going about.
I heard it.
Some comrade, I've listened to it. And it begs some very serious question that those who are being implicated in such a voicemail must now come out and answer, because whether or not their names were called, there is suggestion. Yes, there is the one can infer based on the voice notes of what is going on, and therefore I would urge those who know that their names are being called, that they come out and clear the air. Because it does not look good. And as I said before, those who are responsible, I gather the mayor has resigned and two other persons
Deputy.
Have resigned. I hope the police must act and act quickly to ensure that this is something that is looked into quickly. And I would urge the minister that he reignite this call or this suggestion that there be serious audit of all the parish councils that we have in Jamaica. Serious audit. And he must follow through on it. And he must bring to the public what these audits have found out. We cannot continue like this. We cannot continue where millions and millions of dollars of taxpayers' money, yes, when we have hospitals breaking down, or we don't even have certain amenities in hospitals, and yet still we have persons channeling money, t- taxpayers' money into their own pocket. It's unacceptable. It is scandalous and it is shameful. And shame on the People's National Party, I think, for dodging around and talking about let the chips fall where they may. I think the mayor should be expelled from, suspended from the PNP until the investigation has been completed.
The deputy mayor. There's another story that I want to bring that is brewing, and that is with the Bernard Lodge estate, where the government has proposed to build a number of houses on lands at Bernard Lodge. And we've seen today's paper where the opposition warns that it could derail the process of the development of the Bernard Lodge development. Now, the backstory to this, listeners, is that the government, the Prime Minister, made an announcement in his presentation to Parliament, the presentation that we normally done during the sectoral debate time. And the Prime Minister announced a massive housing development plan. However, Bernard Lodge sits on aquifer that is needed to source water to the NWC. And the argument is that if the development is done, then we will not have access to those aquifers. And as such, there's going to be a water problem in that area. The government largely has been silent on the matter. There was one gentleman who wrote in the papers a couple of weeks ago speaking about the Bernard Lodge issue. His name slips me now. But the government has been very silent as it relates to that particular matter. And we see here now where opposition spokesman, his capacity is not opposition spokesman now. He's member of parliament for South St. Catherine, Fitz Jackson, is warning that the opposition will use its political muscles in Portmore, St. Catherine, to block the planned massive development being proposed by the government for the 4,000 acres of land at Bernard Lodge. Yes, and the government has indicated that it intends to facilitate the construction of 17,000 houses, light manufacturing plants, and agro-processing facilities on the Bernard Lodge lands. But Jackson is saying that the parliamentary opposition is adamant that certain conditions will have to be met to give support. But my understanding also, as it relates to this Bernard Lodge matter, is that the opposition, when in government, also had made plans that the Bernard Lodge to give lands to individuals. I remember Omar Davis had announced that persons were to get houses at Bernard Lodge by July 2014. So, and I'm not playing politics here, it is a much broader issue that we need to look at, because both administrations made grand announcements about those Bernard Lodge lands in St. Catherine, but the due diligence was not done. The problem that we're having, though, is that NEPA, which is to protect our environment, gave a license in principle for the development to happen. So is it that NEPA did the necessary due diligence before giving the nod for any development to be done on those lands? This is a matter, Ralston listeners, that we have to watch, because it's going to be a battle royal by both sides.
Absolutely agree with you. But I noticed that NEPA has grown increasingly silent.
Yes. Yes.
Increasingly silent. I have not heard anything from them. I have not heard them speaking out. And it makes me wonder, Yes, and I'm not accusing NEPA of being political. But it makes me wonder, because they have, in an issue like this, they must come front and center and say to us what actually is going on. I don't agree that we should, given the scarcity of water, that we should be building. There must be other places where we can do this housing development. That's all I'm saying, because you and I, I'm sure, are not against housing development. Mm-mm. But the necessary due diligence must be done to ensure, yes, that we are not encroaching on important things as our water aqueducts.
Indeed.
All right, listeners, we are going to take you into the feedback segment of the program, and we remind you of today's feedback question. Is it time for Jamaica to decriminalize abortion?
Well, I have some responses coming in. Kenroy Williams says, decriminalization of abortion will do no good for the nation. Responsible sexual behavior should be promoted. Romania has one of the highest legal...
If I could just respond to him. But haven't we been talking about that for several years? Hmm. We've been talking about responsible parenting and responsible sexual encounters. And has that really achieved much? Well, and nobody's... And why can't the two run simultaneously?
Well, he says Romania has one of the highest legal abortion rates in Europe, and is still the poorest. You see, the debate starts again.
Right.
Those support and against. Well, we have Crystal Lambert, who says that is the call for decriminalization of the abortion practice linked to making us wealthier as a nation, or only to improve socioeconomic status? What about the right of a woman to determine if she wants to carry the fetus full term or not? Why men must be all up in women's uterus? I am pro-choice. Let women decide what is best for them. And there's a back and forth between both of them. And we have Shane Black says, no comment.
All right, listeners, let me take you into the talk history for this week. Oh, there's no talk history, actually. So there's no talk history for this week. But we want to thank you. This has been Talk Jamaica. A special thanks to you, the respondents, to our feedback question, and a special thanks to you, our valid listeners in Jamaica and the diaspora, who tuned in via talkjamaicaradio.com, Talk Jamaica Radio mobile app, oneradio.link, and as usual, Zeno Radio. Until you hear my voice again, this is Ralston Chamberlain saying goodbye for now.
And on behalf of the Talk Jamaica production team, comprising producer Damian Perkins, our team of studio engineers and technical operators, and my co-host Ralston Chamberlain, thank you for listening to Talk Jamaica, and join us next Sunday for another edition of Talk Jamaica, commentary at its best. As always, listeners, thank you so much for listening. My name is Sanjay Lewis. Have yourselves a productive week.
Whenever I fall, you lift me up. Glory to me, oh God. Our Redeemer, saving grace. I know I'm not worthy to see your face. I try.